Welcome to the SDG Talks podcast, where we discuss all things around the Sustainable Development Goals and the roadmap to 2030.
We are your co-hosts, James and Kevin, here to take you along the SDG ride. We hope you enjoy today's SDG Talks podcast.
Emily Friedman is the Director of Innovation and Operations with the Oda Foundation, based in Karnali, Nepal. She's lived in Nepal for over 2 years and provides a range of stories about the challenges and opportunities around development in rural Nepal. This ranges from access to healthcare supplies, safe water, and training for economic development. We will dive into the role of agriculture, the intersectionality of the Sustainable Development Goals, and what is next for this community of Nepal. A lot to learn from and get inspired from here, and if you're looking for a great organization to partner with, the Oda Foundation is one I highly recommend. Enjoy. Emily, welcome to the SDG Talks podcast. How are you doing?
Hi, Kevin. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. So where in the world are you located today?
I am currently sitting in Kathmandu, Nepal. I got back about 72 hours from West Nepal. So just regrounding back in the city. It's been raining like crazy here, but it's great because Nepal was ranked the worst pollution and air quality in the world 2 weeks ago. So hoping this rain clears the wildfires and clears the air a bit.
Rain is usually good for everything. Granted, too much of it in certain regards can cause flooding in certain ways, but it does kind of usually create like a control alt delete, especially with some of the pollution. So, but I do know with some of the roads, it can make it a little challenging if you're driving across country.
Yeah. I saw the weather report and I was like, okay, I have to get out of West Nepal before the roads wash away. I've been in that situation before. So I was trying to beat the rains and I made it to the city before then.
So you've now been in Nepal for how long?
Coming up on 2 years.
That's amazing. So what have you been doing in Nepal? Tell us about some of your experience in the last 2 years in Nepal.
Yeah. So I have been here working for an organization called the Oda Foundation. It is a community-led project that started about 10 years ago. A man named Karan was working in India as a laborer, which is a very common part of the experience here for many Nepali people who migrate to India, the Gulf, for other opportunities. So Karan was working in India, and when he'd come home, he would always bring medication back because our area of Nepal is notorious for its dangerous roads, lack of access, and lack of resources. So Karan ended up starting a pharmacy out of his family's cow shed, and it grew and grew until an American named John came across the organization and said, I really want to support and help grow this. So while we still don't have electricity, we don't have access to the region by road, we still have to walk, we use solar power. We have now grown into a 14-bed hospital. We have a birthing center, lab technicians, and a full health team staff. So we are the closest access to healthcare by foot by about 10 hours. So I came to work for the organization about 2 years ago. I was more focused on the business innovation side of things, but my role has evolved. So yeah, happy to be here supporting a lot of work.
It's amazing, Emily, and I've enjoyed following part of your journey and getting to spend time with you recently when we were in India for the Unleash program. But to really admire what Oda is doing, and it's definitely the road less traveled, and it's hard work to be able to do true impactful work in places that have been slightly disconnected and remote, just the challenges of logistics and challenges of power and challenges of job opportunity. So I appreciate the focus on community-led initiatives to empower opportunities, to empower access to some of these basic resources. Expand on that a little bit from like the programs that Oda provides and the different initiatives. I know it started around health and it maybe dive into that, but talk to me more about sort of the community-led initiatives that Oda provides and empowers for that population.
Yeah, happy to. So something Oda prides itself on is the foundation of it being community-led. So 80% of our staff members are people from the village who have been upskilled in different capacities to continue to work and serve their region. So with our health team, people from the community who have shown interest in joining the team, Oda Foundation has paid for their scholarships to go become nurses, doctors, health assistants, with expectations that they return. And the same goes for our education department. So we really want to see people in the communities leading their own change. And yeah, one way we do that is through scholarship programs, others through just community-led initiatives. And while we did start as a health program, there's this realization that you really can't solve health problems unless you solve education. So 4 years ago, OTA Foundation partnered with the local government school and said, we're going to help booster this school, bring more resources in, bring more teachers, and actually capacity build our teachers. And then there was the realization that you really can't solve education if you don't solve gender equity, if you don't solve job opportunity and economic mobility. So what I really like about what the work we're doing is, instead of doing this broad stroke change to health or to education, OTA Foundation has taken an approach of holistic change for one small region and community. So we now have an agriculture program, our gender equity, health, education, and then our social enterprise development. So trying to tackle the poverty in the region kind of from all angles.
As we saw working in the Unleash Innovation Lab, I mean, all these SDGs are important and they're all somewhat distinct, but they're all very much interconnected. So it's hard to be like, oh, we just need to focus on health, but you can't have one without the other. Right. And as you've been truly in the weeds and living in Nepal for a little over 2 years now, give me a story or two. Give me some insights. I mean, I'm sure you've had some highs and some lows, and as you've been building and going after some of these programs, I'd love to hear any sort of raw behind the scenes stories that you got that can help kind of paint a picture of some of your experiences.
So one particular story comes to mind of a woman named Perna. So Perna is from a caste called the Dalit caste, which is known, quote, as the untouchable caste of Nepal. And Perna is a young woman, 30 years old, from the community. And she lost her husband in a disaster a few years ago. So she is now a Dalit widowed woman. And widowhood is also considered a taboo in our region. And she is just such an amazing woman. And so she has started to work on our agriculture farm. And about a year and a half ago, we covered her funding to go to a permaculture training to learn about different holistic approaches that are sustainable in farming practices, such as how you take your cow or your water buffalo and you leverage that manure to grow your plants, and then how you use the waste of the plants to continue making more sustainable fertilizers. So Perna is also illiterate. So she went to this training, and before that, she was very quiet in meetings. She rarely spoke up. She went to this 2-week training, and the thing I found most fascinating is she wasn't able to take notes because she can't read or write in Nepali, but she had a smartphone with her, and she took all of the classes she recorded on her phone. And when she came back, she was so vibrant and sharing so much knowledge she had learned, and she was using her phone to go back through the notes to remember what she had learned. And it was a moment that I recognized how powerful technology can be in uplifting people out of poverty. You don't need to learn to read and write. Well, of course, that is an important part of the process. There are these tools coming out that are allowing people to surpass these barriers that have kept them in perhaps generational poverty before. So now Perna has actually grown into a new role, and she's actually now managing our entire agriculture program. She manages 5 people. She sits in senior leadership, and it's been a really good story of how, one, we can use technology as a tool for really good empowerment. And I think also it's been great showing our community that a woman from a caste that has for so long been marginalized, and for a woman who no longer has a husband, also showing her, I guess, her worth and her power as a woman in the community.
It's amazing. And I mean, I think to think about too, when people are thinking about impact, oftentimes they're like, oh, we need, you know, hundreds and thousands of millions of people. We need to build a bridge. We need to spend all this money. But the impact, if you can change one person's life, and kind of the story you told me, that is real change. That is true impact that you and the OTA Foundation can be really proud of. And it's just to hear that example of just that light bulb going off, to going from that mindset of I can't and my life is is over for various reasons, but to the yes, I can, and how tech is playing a role. So kudos to you. That's such an awesome example. And you mentioned too about agriculture and permaculture. And I know in Nepal, in that area, it's a big part of economic growth and opportunity. Mm-hmm. Riff on that a bit more. Tell me more about the agriculture program, the permaculture program, and how it plays such a significant part within the community there.
Yeah, you nailed it. Agriculture plays a very strategic role in the economy and lives of people around the world, and specifically here in Nepal. I believe over 70% of the country's GDP is based on agriculture export here. I don't know if you don't want to quote me on that one.
No, that's good. It's close enough.
But yeah, it's really, I think, is one of the core parts of the great parts of the community we live in, but also the struggles people are facing. And a part of that is because land ownership, every generation, your parcel of land gets passed down, and you have the separation of the land to the kids. And so over the generations, the fractured land ownership has gotten so small that families' land isn't enough for them to completely sustain themselves. And in some cases, it's such a small parcel of land that families are saying, it's not even worth us maintaining. Let's just send our young boys off to India as laborers, and we'll find other ways of economic income to feed ourselves. So what we're actually seeing is a lot of land is going unused, and we're trying to figure out how can we either crowdsource people to start growing again, or incentivizing people to want to return to their land. So yeah, it's an issue that plays into the migration issues, into high malnutrition problems, and food insecurity as a whole.
And kind of these programs that you talked about, the training, and then aspects of creating new opportunities within some of these challenges. How is the Odo Foundation, and what are some of the, I know there's some aspects of kind of creating new markets, whether it's kind of finding better ways to sell the product or upcycling the product or new methods of delivery. What are some examples of kind of the new economic opportunities that you've seen or found built with members of the community?
Yes. So one of our initiatives has been something called Karnali Ratna, which is our social enterprise. And we have been thinking through how can we create job opportunity while also creating services or products for the community that solve the problems we're seeing. So we started this agriculture department where we hire women from precarious situations. And the idea was, let's grow food that is nutritious, and we can use this as an opportunity to provide education to the community on how to grow nutritious foods in sustainable and inexpensive ways. The topography, the weather in Oda can sometimes be difficult for people to grow things beyond potatoes, rice, lentils, and what the most common things that you find in West Nepal. The issue we actually faced after growing cauliflower, broccoli, capsicum, garlic, and a lot more nutritious options, even us setting the price at what it costs for us to grow and cover the labor, we found that it's actually too expensive for the community to afford based on the low income nature of the area we are working. So it's something we're working through. The one way we're trying to solve it is doing education workshops where we're showing people how to grow mushrooms and tomatoes and importing the seeds. People can afford the seeds, which is great. And now they just need the education on how to properly manage their land to grow those types of foods. So the hope is that we'll see the community's output this upcoming harvest season be a little bit more diverse than we've seen in the past.
I mean, that's a great unleash problem framing example in terms of, I mean, starting to work towards a solution, which was well intended, and then kind of realizing that after listening to the market a bit more, that it actually wasn't indeed, it was unattainable because of the price, but then actually importing seeds and education is what's needed in pivoting. So that now is happening, kind of this seed and education program that's now in the works.
Oh yeah. And it has been. So it was really great. A few months ago, we had different classes at the school come, and you know, the eighth graders were working on mushrooms and the sixth graders were working on different types of peppers. And so We're really trying to focus the education work on the next generation. There are studies, you know, after the age of 30 or around there, it's really hard to have behavior change. So our main focus on a lot of our initiatives around menstrual hygiene, equity, agriculture is really focused on the youth.
Amazing. And you just touched a little bit on tiptoeing into all things SDG 6 and water and wash and hygiene and menstrual health and things like that. You've been living in Nepal for 2 years in both kind of an urban area of Kathmandu and kind of a more rural area in Karnali. Tell me about water, your experience personally, and then some of the sort of challenges and obstacles that the community faces and kind of what the Oda Foundation is doing about it.
Yes. So there, oh my gosh, there's so many points here. And as you know, at Unleash, I actually chose SDG 6 to focus on, even though I have no background in it, because I see how incredibly important it is into the context of all of the problems we're trying to solve here. So on a personal note, I get very sick here. I have had many waterborne illnesses. I've been in the hospital multiple times here. And for me, every time it's a reminder that these are the problems that people face on the day-to-day. In the community, waterborne illnesses are very common, specifically around monsoon season. People drink directly from the water, from the rivers, and the water tap that comes directly from the river. In the winter seasons, the water is very cold, so waterborne illnesses are a lot less prevalent. So we see a decline in our clinic for a lot of diseases. Around this time, it spikes quite significantly. The other thing, aside from waterborne illness being extremely common and parasites, is the lack of water that's used for irrigation. So with climate change really affecting countries like Nepal disproportionately, we're seeing in times where there needs to be drought, where there needs to be less water, we're seeing so much more water that people's land is flooding and their crop is being ruined for the entire year. And then the times like monsoon season, when we really need rain, the rain isn't coming at the proper times. So our entire global water system is out of whack, and it's contributing again to malnutrition, food insecurity. Where we are, people's homes aren't built with strong infrastructure. And so when these floods happen, many people lose their homes, many people die, and it's a really devastating situation. So that's when it comes to climate change. One more point on the water. But with the irrigation to the land, we're really trying to figure out a way to build some simple, powerless irrigation system to get the water from the river into the fields in a more structured system, as opposed to just waiting for the rain and hoping for the best. Figuring out a way we can actually pool the water and wait for it and get those pipings in.
I mean, no shortage of water challenges, but also showing the opportunity for water opportunities. Kudos to you for being in it. And I empathize, and I'm sorry for some of the waterborne illnesses you've had. I mean, I've traveled in internationally a few times and have also been on the wrong side of some type of waterborne illness, but it makes you, I mean, I sit here in Chicago, Illinois, and have the privilege of opening up my tap and being able to drink water directly from it. And it's one of those things unless you don't have it or it's been taken away, it's hard to appreciate how important running water is. And it's just use it for everything, making coffee, washing the dishes, taking a shower, brushing my teeth, drinking water as I'm just on a phone call here. I'd love to hear kind of your thoughts on that, of maybe some of your eye-opening moments of kind of, granted, every community is different, and it's not like the Nepalese people have less. They said they maybe have just challenges and some of these obstacles they face due to the challenges of poverty or economic growth, whatever it may be. But what was it, some takeaways you've had from being a foreigner living in Nepal, sort of from being in it? I mean, you grew up in America and you've lived in Nepal, and obviously kind of water could be something you could talk about more, but what are some of these other sort of realizations or learnings that you've had that you certainly did not have before you lived there for an extended period of time?
Living here has by far been the most humbling experience of my life. It has made me realize that everyone is my teacher, and has also made me realize how little I know. So that's something I carry with me every day. It's important that I am constantly reminded and aware of my role as a foreigner, being very careful that I am not the change maker and I can't speak for everyone or anything. And I'm here to be a catalyst for change. And I felt like my first year in Nepal, it was just listening. I was here to learn the context and understand. And even with that, and even with 2 years here, I could spend my whole life here and I will always be an outsider and I will always carry my own background here. And so I try my best to keep myself in check in that regard, in understanding my role as a development practitioner and as a foreigner in the community. But biggest takeaways, oh gosh, there's so many. One is how kind the people are. I feel that everyone goes to a different country when they leave America and they're like, they're the kindest people in the world, because everyone, I think in comparison, you just leave the US sometimes and are always so shocked by the care people have for strangers in other places. So that has been a really wonderful part of my time here. I feel very safe as a woman traveling and being alone in a foreign country. And I don't feel that all the time in other places. So I've been very grateful for the Nepali people and the way they've treated me and have always made me feel like I have family and a home to stay in. In terms of the work I'm doing, the technology has probably been the biggest shock for me and how it's been leveraged and how I live in an area with the highest malnutrition rates, child mortality, and other really big development issues. But people are making TikToks on Instagram and are really involved in the technology platforms of our time. And I think we just need to figure out a better way to leverage those to actually change the narrative. Yeah. Those are just the first things that come to mind.
And you mentioned just technology there and obviously the digital technology. And you mentioned the example earlier with having a phone and recording and overcoming obstacles. What other technology innovations are impacting the community? I know one, you alluded to it earlier, but just transportation logistics, like a road. And kind of tell me about other aspects of how technology has played a role, or as well as kind of the impact of the road that's soon to be completed on the community.
Yeah. So this philosophy of this is what eats away at me at night, is where do you find the balance of necessary infrastructure that allows people to participate in modern society and get the resources that they need, while also keeping communities and culture intact, and where you draw the line of that. And so the road coming has been a big question for all of us. It has been in the works for about 8 years, and it finally made its way through our community about 6 months ago. The first tractor on that road came through the community about 2 months ago, and I was in Oda, and I heard the honking, and we're hours from a road. Once you leave the road, it's about 4 hours of walking, and there's no pollution, there's no cars, there's no lights. And I heard honking and I thought, what is happening? And I looked out the window and there was a tractor. So the first four-wheel vehicle coming through, and it was filled with books from the government. And it was heading to the school to deliver the books for the new school year. So the road, of course, brings medicine and things that we can't carry, like larger oxygen cylinders that we need in our clinic, and things that we haven't been able to have before, like a refrigerator that we can now have vaccines stored and medications that are critical, but we didn't have because we didn't have the electricity or the ability to carry something so large to the community. So the road coming perhaps brings deleterious impacts that we maybe even can't even see at this point. But at the same time, it's going to bring a lot of crucial, necessary items.
What about on the flip side? Are you worried about what kind of the double-edged sword of the negative potential impacts of what it could bring?
Of course, of course. We come from a country and a place that I feel has really wrapped up in a consumeristic mentality, that we're always wanting more, that things are never enough, that happiness for a lot of people is driven by what you buy and what you consume. And we see a lot of places around the world succumbing to the same narrative. And of course, I'm concerned to see another place that has been untouched for so long. Many people in our community have never been in a car. I've never seen a car. There's no reason for them to walk to the road unless they're pretty much leaving for an emergency or they're leaving to go work elsewhere. And yeah, of course, there's worry about so many things associated with, I guess, with modernization and with globalization. But the biggest thing is, how do you educate people to know when they're getting taken advantage of, when these external decisions are impacting them, that they can say, oh, that doesn't feel right, and let me think about why. And then I can say, no, we don't want that store coming to this community, or we don't want, you know, these things implemented. And people having the, I guess, the education and ability to think for themselves to choose what they do and do not want to become a part of their community.
Yeah. I mean, like with anything, there's two sides to every new technology, and a lot of it comes with, and the way I approach technology is just like with anything, it's in moderation in certain ways, and in education, and you as the individual have the ability to control the way that you're consuming it or you're interacting with it. But yeah, when you're talking about sustainable development and new infrastructure, it's you're talking about connecting places that have not been connected. And I mean, you think about life before the Americas and in Europe and Africa were connected, and then kind of how much change in such a fast time. So there's some unfortunate dynamics that'll probably unfold, but I'm hoping that it'll ultimately be net positive from a health perspective and economic perspective, while also continue to find that balance of living in harmony with the earth. I mean, it's sort of like we can't just keep consuming. And I do struggle and worry sometimes with the whole Malthusian catastrophe, with the idea of that, how many people can this world truly sustain, and are there enough resources for us to just meet our basic needs? And I think yes, but at the same time, when you have certain mindsets of greed and certain mindsets of just it's never enough, there's only so much in this world that can provide for us humans.
Right. Yeah, I was listening to an interview Elon Musk did this week, and he was saying, yeah, water is not a problem. He said, everyone's worrying about it. Don't worry, we have enough water. And I love that. And I hope that's the case, but it doesn't feel that way. And that's not what science is pointing to. And I see firsthand, there's not enough water. And people are walking for miles to collect their water. And I hope that there are enough resources to go around. And like you mentioned, this living in harmony will be an interesting, hopefully, next chapter for all of us around the world, because I don't think we have a choice.
Yeah, no, we don't. We're in it together, whether we like it or not. So just to kind of finish out here, I mean, I know we've known each other for a few years now, but we did have the chance to spend time with each other at the in Karnataka, in Mysore, at the Unleash event. Tell me about kind of what was your Unleash experience like, and how, what were some memories and moments that you had, and kind of what's been your experience? Because I know there was a lot of South Asian population there. So yeah, tell me, I'd love to hear more about your Unleash experience.
Oh man. Well, for me, going to Unleash was great that it happened to be in India, because it really helped me grow my network. There were quite a lot of Nepali people there, so it helped develop my community across South Asia very well. Additionally, like I mentioned, I chose to work on SDG 6, clean water and sanitation, and it helped just open my mind in so many different ways. I loved joining an area of development that I don't have any background in, because I learned so much from my team members. We ended up focusing on specifically in India, in Punjab in the north, which is known for very high export of agriculture products. It also has some of the highest levels of cancer directly linked to inorganic fertilizers and pesticides. And so we were talking not only about how those chemicals get into food sources, but specifically into the water sources, and disproportionately affect the health of farmers. And yeah, the Unleashed experience was amazing. I learned so much from my peers, and I created a network that I will leverage forever. So yeah, I highly recommend if anyone's listening who's thinking about doing Unleash, it was definitely a worthwhile experience.
The Unleashed family runs deep and is absolutely one of the strongest communities that we've both been fortunate to be part of. And I'm excited. It's May, and I know they're talking about Lab 2023 and the Plus program and the Ambassador program. So keep an eye, eyes and ears out for all that. Hopefully by the time when this post, it'll be out. But yeah, Emily, I guess just kind of like final insights, mic drop from you. I mean, any sort of question, comment, quote, or anything that you could leave us with here today to, do a little bumps at Spike to finish us off here.
Yeah, I guess the last thing, bringing it much more high level, something that my time here has really helped me understand is how to critically think about our global systems and structures. And when we're looking at extreme poverty around the world, while at the same time, we are sending people to Mars and, creating such a high level and skillful society, why do we have such a large gap where the divide is just getting so large that we can't, unfathomable almost to me. And so really starting to question our society and our structures on who's benefiting from this poverty, because that's where we kind of need to look to start to figure out how to solve these problems, specifically around labor. And if we keep people uneducated, then we keep a cheap labor workforce. And then who's benefiting from that? And so kind of following the thought process upstream to find out who's keeping people in these situations is my hope on what I continue to focus on and what other people continue to question.
Well said, Emily. Well, we need more of your passion and energy and drive. And I'm excited to hear about, I guess, next. So what's next for Emily? Kind of finish off. I know you're in Nepal now, but give us a scoop on what's the next chapter in your life.
Yes. So Nepal will always have a place in my heart. My hope is to actually hopefully dedicate my career to working here in Nepal. My next step will be starting graduate school. I will be getting my master's in international development. And yeah, we'll see. My focus will hopefully be on like social innovation. I want to continue to work on like the tech and business side and leverage those technologies to find the change. And yeah, we'll see what happens from there.
I love it, Emily. Well, I'm so proud of you and excited for you and just grateful for the time that we've had to be able to collaborate and truly can't wait for what's next.
Likewise, Kevin. Thanks for your time. This was really fun.
Of course. Until next time. Thanks for listening to the SDG Talks podcast. Make sure to check out all the show notes for relevant links from this show. Please share and follow SDG Talks on social media and stay tuned for updates from the Unleash in United Nations community.
The goal of the SDG Talks is to bring you good content. So if you want to learn about something specific or have suggestions, please let us know. I look forward to seeing you next time on SDG Talks.